in.
Good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Tuesday, May the 29th, 2018. 17 minutes past the hour. The repeats are over. We are back live here on WWGH Radio. Hope you had a tremendous Memorial Day holiday. The rain stayed away, and the weather was nice and warm for all the people who wanted the warm weather. We've got an interesting week coming up here on WWGH Radio. A lot of great guests as the week will progress, and we'll tell you more about those as the week moves along. But we're going to start the week off with a great guest, a first-time visitor to the program here. He is the editor of the Marion Star, Ben Lenka. Ben, how are you?
Great. Thanks for having me. Appreciate being here.
Now, how long have you been the editor of the Star?
Probably since early March. So March. Not very long.
Now, do you live close to Marion?
No. I don't know what close is. I live in Westerville right now.
Westerville. Now, you also are the editor of the Newark paper.
Correct. So I live kind of equidistant between the two.
What is the job of an editor?
So part of my job is to, I mean, my main job is to make sure we're providing good stories that are interesting to readers in our communities, to make sure that our reporters and staff are doing the job they're supposed to do, and also to be kind of like the public face of the institution in the community. So when there's a Rotary lunch or something important that, you know, the Marion Star should be at, per se, not necessarily cover for a story, but be at, then that's kind of what my job is.
Now, how did you come to be the editor of a newspaper?
Well, I started my career in journalism, per se, when I was 8 or 9 years old as a delivery boy for the Worthington paper in suburban Columbus. They don't even let kids deliver papers anymore. There must be some kind of work rules, but...
Well, that's one way. I didn't even know.
Yeah, I don't think kids deliver papers anymore. Oh, they don't for us anyway. So, but I did that as a kid. And then I went to school for... Initially, I wanted to be a sports broadcaster. That was my first passion. I love sports, but... I did an internship with 10TV, and I was kind of told there that I might be a bit plain-looking to be a television personality, so that's the real world out there, I guess. But so I went to graduate school at Northwestern to kind of try to find my love a little bit, and I really fell in love with journalism and writing and covering politics and government was my first love. I like sports, but I also like weekends and evenings off, and if you write about sports and you're working every weekend and every evening, so a little bit more of a personal life covering government. So I spent my first 10-12 years as a reporter, first in small town Ohio, Chillicothe. Then I went to Fort Wayne for 8 years. Didn't think I was going to be there that long, but it was the pit of the recession, and I was glad to have a job. My wife had a job. I got a job back in Newark in 2012 as the special projects investigative editor for Newark and the Star and its 8 other sister papers across the state. So I kind of helped lead projects. We did a lot of work on the opiate problem. We did the first series of looks into MetaSolutions and what's going on there. And then in spring of last year, I took over as the Newark Advocate editor. And then again, so then spring of this year, I added the Star to my belt. So,
going from broadcast journalism to print journalism, what was the transition like?
It was really nice. I liked the fact that I could write a little bit more. TV, you have to be very quick. I mean, your stories are 10, 12, 15 seconds, unless it's a major event. So I really liked being able to put a little bit more depth into it. And you get a little bit more anonymity as a print reporter. I mean, people don't see you every day. When I was in Fort Wayne, I wrote for 4 years and no one knew who I was until I started doing a weekly column on road construction. But everyone said, oh, hey, it's the road sage versus, hey, this is the guy who covers the mayor's race or anything like that. So,
why did government become your love?
Well, I really found politics interesting, and once you cover politics, you have to find out what they do once they win, right? So that's what government is, and so that's kind of holding officials accountable. So I think I said in my column, you know, I really enjoy telling, you know, giving voice to the voiceless, giving some power to the people who don't have it, and then holding those in power accountable to make sure that they're doing what's right for their communities.
When you work for a local paper, how much does what's going on at the state level, what's going on at the national level matter?
It matters in the sense, in terms of what we do. It matters in the sense of how it affects what's going on in Marion or Marion County specifically. I mean, I don't want my reporters, you know, there's a million people writing about what Trump is tweeting or saying, and there's probably 1,000 or maybe not 1,000, but, you know, 100 doing what Kasich is or DeWine and Cordray. But, you know, we're the only ones telling the stories of Marion and Marion County on a day-to-day basis, at least in our medium. So that, you know, and I've told them that 1,000 times, you have to focus on the stories that are local, because that's why people come to the Star. They're not coming to the Star for stories about Columbus or Washington. But if there are things that happen in those places that affect us locally, like if trade tariffs affect how the economy does in Marion, then we can tell that story. Or if school funding and how that affects Marion schools, I mean, that's a decision made in Columbus that affects us greatly in Marion County. I mean, those are that's the kind of way you balance it.
It's interesting you talk about making officials accountable. Nationally, that's pretty, you know what you're doing. Statewide, you can even look at that and say what you're doing. On a local level, it would seem much harder because you're the only ones. You're the only ones looking into what they're doing. You're the only ones holding that group accountable. Is there a lot of officials on the local level in Marion not being held accountable?
It's tough to say. I mean, every community has officials. So, I mean, there's superintendents, there's mayors, there's county commissioners. And, you know, I think for the most part, I mean, most officials get into the business for the right reason. I mean, I don't see a huge raft of, you know, people, you know, trying to abuse their positions of power in Marion or Marion County. But it's more about making sure that the public is aware of what their priorities are as in power, so that they can know, well, is that the kind of priorities that I see for myself or that I believe are important for Marion and Marion County? And that gives them a decision to make when it comes election time.
You know, there was a lot of talk a few weeks ago, but I think this was done by a lot of other papers, when the salaries were published of the local officials. What was the thinking behind that?
It's something I had done a lot as a reporter, and I found that most people always found it interesting. Usually the first time you do it, you get the most pushback, like, oh, well, why are you picking on X, Y, or Z? Why are you putting this guy's name in the paper, or ladies? But I just found that it's always interesting to see who in government is making the most money from the taxpayers. We don't put it out there to say whether it's bad or good necessarily, but I do find that most people find it interesting. We're doing a similar thing looking at school salaries. Obviously, that's come into a little bit of a controversial light given what's going on in Harding and the kind of the controversy between the union and the administration there. So it's got a little bit more of a news peg. But it's something that I think we'll probably try to do every year. Sometimes the lists change, sometimes they don't. But I do find that people find it interesting, and there is a balance. I mean, we could run an online list of everyone and everything that they've made, from, you know, the mayor to the janitor, but at some point it's not newsworthy to tell people what people are making. I mean, just because the information is public doesn't mean it's appropriate to share it in that kind of medium.
When people's names and people's salaries are published in a paper that people read, what was there blowback from that locally?
Most of the things that I saw, and these are typically the responses I see are people posting comments on Facebook. So most of the things I saw were saying that public safety officials, they get what they deserve. I mean, most of the higher paying people were public safety, fire, and police. So that was the biggest comment I saw, was that, well, that's right, they should be making that money. So I didn't get a lot of people saying, well, why are you publishing this?
That's good. The Marion City School story is very interesting because it seemingly came out of nowhere about a month ago. And my understanding is, as I have read and seen, is that budget cuts are coming. They have a new superintendent starting next fall, this coming fall. He's already taken the job, though, I think. Am I correct? Marion City Schools, Steve Fuji is no longer going to be.
He's there now, isn't he?
But he is the superintendent. He was the interim superintendent, Fuji. But they're getting a new one for the fall, correct? I believe that's right.
I could be wrong. I thought the new guy. No, the new guy's there now.
Yeah, the new guy's there, but that's not Steve Fucci.
Correct.
Yeah, right. He just relinquished that not too long ago.
Right.
Right.
Okay, sorry.
Yes, yeah. So the last year, 90% of the last year was governed under Steve Fucci, who was the interim superintendent because Gary Barber left a year ago. So the new guy's there now, has only been there for a couple months, and the budget for next year has come about, and it's going to be cut. And people are resigning, people are leaving, and then there is this story about the head of the union who was looking at some information that maybe he should not have been looking at. I guess if you're on the side of the school, you think he should not have been looking at because you fired him. And if you're just so happens he's the head of the union, in a great irony, and I think he thinks, as I read in the Star, that he was fired because of that, and a lot of the people feel that he was fired because of that, the teacher. Is that a good summation of where we're at with this?
Yeah, there's clearly some issues of trust between the union people and the administration in Marion schools. I'm not saying they're insurmountable, but there's definitely trust issues. I mean, no doubt.
Where is it now? What is the idea? I mean, our school's out now. Are we looking at a strike in the fall if things are not fixed? What is the feeling with your pulse on this story as the Star has been covering it? Where do you think it's headed?
Well, I mean, I think the first thing they're probably looking at is appealing the firing of the union official. I mean, I think that likely is the first step that would happen to see kind of where that goes. The administration has said that they need to make cuts based on state funding cuts, which is that's the go-to reason most any time a school district makes cuts is to blame the state. Not to say there isn't legitimate reasons for that, but I mean, we need to be very honest with ourselves as community that Marion City Schools enrollment is declining. That is a much larger issue that is much more difficult to address than asking the state for more money. I mean, to me, that's the biggest issue facing the district is how to reverse enrollment decline, and that gets to the larger community and how do you reverse population decline in Marion County. I mean, I think that's the biggest issue facing the community and the schools personally.
Now, in the city, is there population decline?
I didn't look at the city stats that just came out recently, but countywide there is. In Marion County, there is a slight population decline, yes.
Do you think this has more to do with not so much population, but the fact that open enrollment is a fairly new thing that used to not to be the way we did things? And ever since that, it's been very difficult for them to pass a levy or a bond. And they do have declining enrollment because people can go to River Valley. I think last time I checked, of the schools we have in Marion, Marion City, Pleasant, Elgin, Ridgedale, River Valley, the only one with a population that's increasing is River Valley.
Well, open enrollment is definitely an issue that affects all schools. However, I would say the idea that would ever go away in this environment, I don't see that happening. I mean, it seems to be the push is more and more to get towards competition between schools. And I'm not saying that's a good thing necessarily, but the at least from the government or the governor and legislature in Columbus, that competition is definitely their push for education.
What do you see friction-wise here? When you read the stories, you get that there's a great deal of friction there, especially with the firing of the head of the teachers union.
Well, I can see both sides on this. It's a tough issue because you have a budget cut for Marion City Schools that affects teachers essentially losing their job. Whether they would actually have to lay off teachers or not, it depends on how many teachers resign themselves. And teachers are saying, well, I'm going to resign now before you lay me off or don't renew my contract, because if you don't renew my contract, then that looks bad if I try to get a job somewhere else because it looks like you fired me or I didn't do a good job. So that causes problems right there. And, you know, teachers, well, look, you guys are paying all this money to our new superintendent, to our treasurer. I mean, look, that's an egregious amount. And they're saying, or at least the board is saying, well, we have to pay what is appropriate to hire someone who will do a good job. And that's it's difficult because I understand the balance. You don't want to hire, I mean, yeah, it'd be great. Well, we could hire a superintendent for $50,000, but then are you getting a good superintendent? Will he or she do a good job leading the schools? I don't know. So I understand why you have to pay a good salary to get a good leader, because those jobs are tough.
Well, the question then becomes, do you think this gets resolved? We have 3 months. Do you think they're going to, okay, fine, and we'll all go along? Because I think one of the big problems here is you have a new superintendent who does not know these people very well. And I think, boy, the union head getting fired, boy, that just really made it 10 times worse than what it was. Before, it was just about money. Now, I believe there's a lawsuit going on.
Yeah, I mean, my hope would be that they, you know, the two sides would just start talking to each other. That's how you build trust, is building that relationship between yourselves. So hopefully they can start by doing that. I understand there's legal issues if you're going to appeal a firing, but they're, if you're not talking, then the distrust is only going to grow.
Is what the union steward did was that very inappropriate? I mean, was that if you look at the Marion City Schools rules and regulations, did he break things that shouldn't have been broken?
It's very difficult to say at this point because we don't know specifically. It's not like I personally have not seen the emails that he is alleged to have looked at improperly. I mean, some would argue, well, any email between the superintendent and the school board or whatever is public record, so anyone could look at them anyway. But, you know, without seeing what he's alleged to have looked at, the scope of it, I don't know, and I haven't seen his job description on what he was and was not allowed to do. I mean, he or his attorney is basically saying, well, it's his job to monitor these things. So
he had access,
right? He was a tech person,
right? So he did. I guess in that particular story, and maybe this will come out as it goes along, but what did he have to gain by looking at those emails?
I mean, I guess, who knows? I mean,
that's what I couldn't figure out when I read the story. I mean, I understand they say they didn't like him doing it, but what was in there that they didn't like? What did he do that was so inappropriate?
Again, it's too early to say at this point. We're looking into it, I promise you.
Wait, I think Terry has something to say here.
No,
go ahead, Terry.
I just was wondering, do you think that maybe those emails might have contained the people that were going to be let go, maybe, or something, and that he knew that, and they were afraid that maybe he would tell those people?
I think that's speculation. I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't. Again, I have no idea.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll find out as time goes on. What makes a good story? That's obviously a good story. There's been 3 stories
right
now on that. Yeah.
I mean, makes a good story is something that people are going to find interesting. And I know we were talking before when we were off air, you know, it's not necessarily it's a bad story or a good story, but it's something that people are going to read. You know, in today's world, you know, we're asking people to invest not only their money with us, but their time. And that's a very important resource. I mean, when I did just a quick look at stories over the course of a year, can you guess how long the average time spent on a story was?
Let's see, 3 minutes.
18 seconds.
Oh, 18 seconds?
Yes.
So they're not even reading these things.
So, I mean, that just gives you an idea of...
In a year?
Over the course of a year.
18 seconds.
18 seconds was the average time people spent on a story.
So they about read the headline.
Yep. So the key is, how do we get them to not only click on a story with us, but to scroll down and invest some time?
Now, see, this is something I find interesting about newspapers, because I do think print journalism is one of the most interesting forms of journalism, because I believe it has stayed impartial to a certain degree. But the headlines are what always make me think, oh, maybe not. Because the headlines, which I think are the catchers, if you know that the reader is only spending 18 seconds on average, that's all they're getting. And when the headline says something salacious, that's all they know. They didn't even read the story to figure out what was there. How do you come up with headlines?
Well, for us, the key, because we're focusing on, again, local stories in Marion and Marion County, so we're trying to get get specifics in there so, A, people know it's a local story. It's not an Associated Press or a USA Today story. So if it's a story about a school, we're not just going to say school district. We're going to say Marion City Schools or something like that. And you want a strong action verb in there if you can. And if there's a name that resonates with people, like the mayor's name or a commissioner, that's very important. I mean, that kind of stuff helps people, because you want people to know what's local, and you also want people to know what happened. And you have to say it in an interesting way, and you only have 10 words. So it's very complicated, but also I tell my people not to make it too complicated. You know, just like if the story happened, what would you say to me to let me know it happened, and then write that down. So
we all face this in media and in journalism, I think, because all news is not good news. How do you deal on a local level with access? Have you ever had people, well, we don't want to talk to you, we don't want to deal with you, we know what you're doing, and we don't want to deal with you?
Oh, sure. I mean, that happens all the time in journalism. You know, I mean, if it didn't, then we probably are not doing a good job of looking into things around the community, because, you know, when people tip us off that X, Y, or Z is going wrong, then we need to look into it, and people clearly don't want to talk to us when things are going wrong. But if it's a government or school, then we can request public documents and things like that to get information that way. If it's not, you know, there's ways to go around, I guess, trying to convince people. Usually when people come to me to say, hey, why aren't you looking into this? My first response is, well, you know, well, what's going on? Is it just affecting you? No, it's like there's hundreds of us. Well, I need the more people that you can get on the one side to build that story, then it gives it a little bit more credence than just saying, you know, you don't want to follow up on every single little tidbit you get. But if you can build that story by getting a lot of sources on one side, then you can go to the other person who might not want to talk and say, listen, we're going to run this story with these dozen people or so saying this. We can run it with you, with your response or without, but it's going to get in there one way or the other. So you sometimes have to put a little bit of pressure on the other side.
It's interesting because this happens in television, radio, and newspapers. There has been this kick because people say, oh, there's so much bad news. It's all blood and guts. It's awful. We don't want to hear it. It's corruption. It's investigations. We're just going to do good news. A matter of fact, a few years ago, there was a television station locally. That was their whole premise. We're just going to do good news. Whatever became of that idea, I don't know. It didn't happen. But there are newspapers that do that across the country. Is that possible, to just do good news, happy news?
I mean, I guess anything is possible, but I don't think that'd be good journalism personally. I think a good local newspaper will have a balance of telling, good things that are going on in the community and things that need attention. I mean, for example, you mentioned the Marion City Schools stuff that we've been doing. I think that's very important as a journalist, as an editor. Stories about things that might not be right in the community are important to be told, so people, A, know what's going on, and B, it sheds, you know, the best disinfectant is sunlight, right? So that's kind of our mantra. So if we're shedding light on things, then A, more things might come to the surface. We might make a better decision as a community on how to move forward. But we balance that with things that are going well in the community. And we've just done, over the weekend, hopefully people saw the features on some of our local graduates and the cool things they're doing. The one living his dream, going to Vanderbilt to be an engineer. Another one who wasn't able to be a pilot, but then found a second love in helping people. So, I mean, those are that's the way to do the balance, is you find the good stories about, you don't want to tell, like I assume everyone in journalism has heard, no one tells a story about the plane that landed properly, right? I mean, that's not interesting, but the plane crashes is interesting because it's unusual. But that's not to say the plane that landed properly, there aren't interesting people on that plane whose stories would be interesting to tell. So that's kind of the way we balance it, by finding people in Marion and Marion County who have interesting stories worth telling. And then you balance that with kind of the breaking news or the investigations of the day.
What is good journalism? What's your definition?
Good journalism is telling the stories that are important to the community that you serve. I mean, that's as simple as I would put it. And hopefully we're doing that at the Star. I mean, that's what we're trying to do. I know that we're not doing as many stories as people would like, but I think we're doing a good amount of stories for the staff and the resources we do have locally. So
what is the feedback in the Marion Star office right now? What is the public saying?
you know, most people have been positive to me since I've gotten here, but maybe that's just because I'm new and they want to be nice to the new guy. So hopefully I'll keep that honeymoon going for a little bit longer. So that's been good. I think, like I mentioned before, again, when we were off air, that it's been interesting in Marion when we have written positive stories that people have commented very favorably. I mean, they've gotten a lot higher readership than in some of our other markets. So that's good, that it seems that people in Marion and Marion County are interested in things that are going well in Marion and Marion County. And I don't know if you're aware, we've kind of formed a small partnership with the Marion Maid, the Marion Foundation, who've been providing us kind of submitted articles that we've run in every Monday's paper, kind of about interesting things or people in Marion and Marion's history. So that's kind of a way we were able to fill that niche a little bit more without necessarily having to dedicate our reporters themselves to do it. So the foundation thought that that was an important thing to do, and we were happy to provide them a vehicle to do it in.
When it comes to good versus bad, when you have all the analytics that you do because of the website, when you say Marion people are spending more time on good stories than other communities, by what margin would you say?
It's tough to say. I haven't done the math myself, but it's just been interesting on the comments on the story, and that's what I'll give you, are far and away more positive on positive stories than in other markets. I mean, that's where I've really noticed that people are, oh, hey, did you see, hey, local Marion mother, did you see that your son was in the Star today because of, I don't know, sports or graduation or something? I mean, that you see that a lot, that people want to share that, oh, I saw someone I know's child in the paper or friend. I want to make sure that they know that they were featured positively. So I see that a lot in Marion, which I guess is a good thing.
You know, one of the big things that have changed over the last 20 years is the way the Star's delivered. Used to be, had to come to your door, and that's how you read it. What is the circulation now by hand of the Marion Star? Paper copies.
I didn't bring that with me, but it's, if we're talking about how many people get the paper delivered,
yeah,
to
roundabout, roundabout.
I'm going to guess 4,000 to 5,000 a day. So, I mean, it's much smaller than it used to be. But
now, how many online subscriptions roundabout?
People who subscribe only to online, less than 1,000. That's still a market we're struggling to get. I mean, if we could get more people to read us online, I mean, that would be great. But the challenge is convincing people to pay for something that they're used to getting for free. And I mean, that's an industry-wide challenge that we're facing, you know, beyond the Star. I mean, everyone's facing that that's in journalism, because since the internet was around, people were just, oh, well, we'll just throw these stories that we've already written on our webpage without thinking, well, why would I pay for it if you're already giving it to me online? But, you know, people, I assume most people in Marion are aware that they get a few number of articles for free per month, and if they want to read more, they have to be a subscriber, which is very cheap. I mean, I think at one point it was like $10 for 6 months or something like that.
Will there be a day that there will be no, that you will not have an option, do you think, to get it paper, a paper copy anymore?
I mean, will there be a day ever? Probably.
In the next 5 years?
No, I don't think so. Okay. I mean, there may be. I mean, I could see the case where papers the size of the Star, not necessarily us, because I honestly don't know, but papers that size might say, well, maybe we're only 3 or 4 days a week in print versus 7, or maybe we don't have a Monday paper. But going all digital in that short of time, I don't see happening. I mean, the Sunday paper is still, I mean, people still see a high value in that. I mean, whether it's for our content, which I hope is part of it, but also for their comics, their coupons, their, you know, large crossword puzzles. I mean, so there's still a large value in the Sunday paper.
You know, it's interesting because we do have a few radio stations in Marion, and we also have a couple television stations, although I don't think any of those television stations do any kind of broadcast news or even local news at this point, I don't think. But broadcasting from the beginning of time, you didn't have anything to sell people. You sold them time, but there was no subscription. You didn't have to deliver it to their house. So it's interesting that papers for a long time always had that revenue source that broadcast media did not have. Now, on the flip side, though, broadcast could get it to you quicker, because if it happened 5 minutes ago, we could be talking about it. So I think those two mediums have become very important. And I say all that to say this. Now being on the internet, now being right up getting it out there. We can all get it out there so quick. How important is it to be first?
I would say it's less important for us in the local papers. I mean, only because the competition is a little bit less than, say, you were in Columbus or New York. I mean, there aren't, you know, there aren't 20 media, you know, fighting over the same story. So I say, I want us to be first and immediate when things are happening right now. Like, let's say there's a major fire going on downtown in Marion and, you know, fire trucks are screaming down the street. We need to have something up right away saying, hey, people, we're on this. This is happening. Keep following us. But, you know, if it's something that happened a day ago that people are now just finding out about, then we need to make sure that we're taking our time to get it right a little bit more. Because the high engagement for people is if something is happening at this specific instant. So that's really when being first is more critical.
Is there a moment you can recall where it was something breaking, it's happening now, and you got it wrong?
I can't think of anything personally where that happened. I mean, the biggest breaking news situation that I've kind of been in charge of since I've been an editor was the shootings in Kirkersville down in Licking County. I don't know if you guys remember, familiar with that, when the yeah. police chief was murdered and the two women were murdered at the nursing home by the guy who eventually killed himself. So that was, there was a lot of theories going around at that time about what was happening down there, about what was the cause. But I think we did a pretty good job of balancing what we knew versus what we felt comfortable saying. And yeah, there's so many examples nationally of people who share things that they think are right, but they aren't. I mean, you go back to 2000 when Al Gore won the election, right? According to some of the TV stations. And I was in journalism school at that time, so that really was a good lesson to me that I've kept to this day. So people aren't going to be mad at the Marion Star for being 10 minutes later than, you know, the Columbus Dispatch or something if we're doing the right job of telling the story the right way, I think.
And we are getting a call. Caller, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, I just want to make a comment. I was coming home from church Sunday, and I went down Vernon Heights Boulevard. Did you happen to see all the flags?
On Vernon Heights Boulevard?
Yes, in that median there, they had flags from one end of Vernon Heights Boulevard clear to the other end. And I thought that was such a nice thing for that area to do, that neighborhood to do. Every one of, there was flags clear up through there.
And they, in representation of Memorial Day. That was a nice touch. I did see that, a matter of fact.
Okay, just a comment.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you for listening. Take care. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm, bye.
And if you do have a question, you can call in 740-383-9944, comment or question. How hard is it to balance what you do with your family life? Being a husband?
Yes, yep. With two children, 9 and 7. So the good thing, I mean, we live in an interesting time because we have technology that allows us to work from anywhere. So it's a good thing. If I have a kid who's sick, I can say, well, I need to stay at home and read some stories from there. But the bad thing is, my phone's always on me, and now I can always be reached. So getting away is definitely more challenging, and my wife will agree with that 100%. So really, you need to force yourself to take a break. I'm not going to check Facebook this Sunday, or I'm not going to check my email today. If it's urgent, hopefully people would text or call you and not be relying on that media. So it's a challenge because you always want to be, unfortunately, in media and in a lot of industries, kind of the excessive layers of management per se are gone. And so there's not other people to turn to in Marion when there's a story breaking than me. There's not a city editor or a secondary person. So it can be a challenge. So you try to find time when you can. And sometimes you just got to say, well, I'm not going to work today unless it's like something that's super urgent. But most things can typically wait. And that's what I, and for me, it's a challenge, but it's definitely so for, I think, for younger reporters, because, you know, they're so eager. They want to work so hard. They want to get that story right. They want to do a good job. And, you know, I have to tell them, listen, you are going to burn yourself out and you're going to hate this job if you don't take some time for yourself. So I definitely stress that.
Now, the two reporters in Marion are very young, Sarah and Hassan. Tell me a little bit about them.
Well, they're both great people. I inherited a great staff. I don't take any credit in hiring them, but I am lucky to have both of them. Like you said, they're both very they're fairly new reporters. I don't think either of them have. I think both of them have less than 5 years combined in professional journalism experience, but that's not super uncommon in a paper the size of the Star. The good thing is that they're both eager to be engaged in the community and they attend meetings and write. And I think they do a good job of finding interesting people to tell their stories. So I would say if anyone sees them, you know, please say hi. Don't be afraid to share your story with them. Because the biggest thing in journalism nowadays is we don't have advertising or even circulation people fanned out throughout the community to hear stories. So we're kind of a little bit more reliant on people reaching out to us directly to say, hey, Ben, did you hear that? That this is going on at Harding High School, or this is going on in Waldo, or something like that. So I always encourage people, if you have an interesting story, to reach out to us. You know, we might not be able to do it. We might not be able to do what you want, but the more we know, the better we can prioritize how we do use what we have.
How many stories per week, localized, get in the Star?
I'd say probably... Are we counting sports?
Yeah, let's leave sports out.
Okay, so probably 20 or so a week of local stories.
20 in a week. Is that...
That's not including things like briefs, news briefs, or things like that. That's byline stories, I'd say.
One thing the Star has been doing recently is these restaurant inspections. How did that come about? That's a fairly new thing.
Yeah, I made sure we started doing that as soon as I took over, because I think that, again, gets to back to things that people are interested in. You know, these are my experience in Newark was that was one of the biggest public records stories that we could do. And it's not a complicated thing for us to do. We just get them from the health department. We publish them, and then people can find out what's going on at local restaurants. We did have a... At least in Newark, and I've kept the policy over here, we had a bit of a pushback because we used to run all of them, all the violations. But then people were like, oh, this isn't that big of a deal, or this was fixed right away. And so we're like, okay, well, we'll just publish the major one, the critical violations, I believe is the term they use. And, you know, Marion, like almost every community, people like to go out to eat, and they like to see what's going on and like to see what restaurants are having issues, so I don't want to eat there, or maybe, I can't believe this is happening there. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't eat at any place that has a violation, because I don't know you'd be able to eat anywhere. It's what they say, you know, you don't ever want to go to a restaurant's kitchen, right? I mean, I worked at one before. I mean, it was McDonald's, but still. So, I mean, I just think people find it interesting, and we've gotten good readership, good response. I haven't personally received any blowback from the restaurant community. No one's criticized us for running them, at least not to me directly. So I think it's a good thing to run.
If the restaurant is an advertiser, does any thought ever go into that?
I have no idea who advertises with us, so no.
No. It's interesting, because I would think in running that would be the biggest... fear, because I but no blowback at all from that.
No, and I Marion. Think, and by doing it, and I think by being consistent and doing it fairly, like I said, only reporting on the critical violations, and then noting in the ones where it was corrected on site to note that. But again, these are things that, and I know that it gets a bigger voice when it's in the Star, but these are things that anyone could find on their own if they really wanted to. So we just try to make it a little bit easier for you to get them.
Is there anything coming, any big changes in the next few months, weeks?
At the Star?
Yeah.
No, I see no large changes coming that I know of. I mean, the biggest thing we're pushing for is just to do better, a little bit better every day. Obviously, it's the summer, so you know, we'll have people on vacation, so we might have a little bit fewer stories than normal, but nothing out of the ordinary.
Now, your job as an editor, do Sarah and Hassan, do they have to run everything by you? Do you have to read everything before it goes in? How does that process work?
I mean, I would say I read about 90% of everything before it goes in. The only time that wouldn't happen, other than when I'm on vacation, would be if it's a super breaking story that we need to get something up, a paragraph up right now, or a paragraph or two up right now to the web, then they should feel free to do that if I'm not available to read. But the vast majority of things that they're writing, I'm reading before they're published, yes.
Is there a story that sticks with you, that you just have always kept with you throughout your career?
Well, I guess one of the things, like, this goes back to back when I was in journalism school, so talk about timing. My first day, so when I was in Northwestern for graduate school, they offered a quarter to be in Washington, D.C. And I was like, well, that sounds interesting, so I'll do that. So my first day in Washington, D.C. was September 15th, 2001. So you kind of know when that was. So I was like the only person in the airport going in and out. So, but the thing that struck me, I got to tour the Pentagon while it was still being basically clear to be rebuilt. It wasn't even being rebuilt at the time. And I got to interview a man who literally life was saved because he had an early morning meeting somewhere else in the building where, 'cause his office was destroyed. And he took me on a tour and kind of showed me the things that went on that happened in the building, and that, you know, it's the devastation there, but also kind of the hope that he had for the future was really inspiring.
When it comes to covering government, we're a kind of divided country right now, and it goes right down those party lines, Democrat and Republican. Do you ever have a thought or a fear, or have people claimed that you have a political bias?
Yes. Both sides think we're the other side.
That's
typically how it goes.
Isn't that how it goes? Yeah. And why do you think that is?
Because especially now, I think, you know, with it being the divisions, people are so, almost invested in their own side that, unfortunately, I would say there's a lot of, I don't want to use the term media because I think that's not appropriate, but there's a lot of stuff out there that, I guess, boosts their own beliefs that they can go. If you want to believe something, you can find any number of sources that will tell you what you want to believe. And if you see something that goes against that, and I'm not saying we never get everything, we don't get everything right 100% of the time, or we don't always get all the nuance and everything, but, you know, we do strive to do that. I mean, that is our goal. But there's plenty of places out there that's not their goal. That their goal is to feed into what your preconceived notions are about anything, right, left, whatever. And so it's easy to get into this bubble where you just believe what you want to believe, and everything that's not is fake news, hashtag whatever. And that's disappointing and discouraging. But I think there's still plenty of people out there who aren't like that. The good and bad thing about the internet is everyone has a voice, but sometimes those voices can be amplified beyond what they actually represent.
It's interesting because being somebody, as you are, who's obviously interested in government, when people throw their hands up and say, I don't even want to cover politics, we're not even going to talk politics because it will turn people off. What do you say to somebody who would say that, who would be in the media?
I think you're doing a disservice to people because politics that's the art of, really the art of setting priorities as a civilization. I mean, that's how you choose between, you know, you want to go forward on one thing or another. And if you're not doing that, then you're just letting people in based on their, you know, how they look in a picture or what their name is, versus, you know, kind of what they stand for. And that's really what you need to get at. And that's what holding people accountable is especially during elections, is getting people to say, you know, what they would do if elected, what their core beliefs are, how they see the community going forward. And then if should they win, holding them to that, saying, this is what you said you would do, and seeing if they do it. I mean, the easiest examples are, you know, when a mayor says, well, if I'm elected, then, you know, I don't know, Center Street's going to be repaved. in 2 years. Well, 2 years later, is it repaved or not? And that, I mean, that's a very simple example, but that's kind of what we try to do in a larger scale.
What does it say to you that over 60% of their people get their news on Facebook?
It says to me that that's reality. You know, I don't know that I think that's the best way to get news personally, but you know, we're not shying away from that from the start. I mean, we have our own Facebook page. We're trying to get our stories out there. We're trying to play the game as best we can. You know, we don't want to put everything out there because then you get dinged by Facebook if you post too many things in a day. So we're trying to do the best we can to get the good news that we share out there. I mean, I do have concerns that Facebook says it's going to judge what's legitimate news and not. I mean, I hope, you know, hopefully we are, but you know, I don't know that Facebook is the right source to be judging what's legitimate news and what is not. I mean, in, ideally it would work great, but you can easily see how that can be skewed one way or in any number of ways based on who's setting the metrics.
Something you said earlier on sticks with me. I think it's fascinating that online, the average time spent on a Star story is 18 seconds in the last year. All the hard work that goes into writing these things, what does that say to you?
Again, it just says that's reality. It's
reality, but do you shrink your stories? Do you pay more attention to the headline? Do the first two lines mean a whole lot more than the rest of the story?
Oh, yeah. Well, first, I mean, so the headline's critical because without a headline, you're not even getting 18 seconds. You're getting 0 seconds because they're not even clicking on it. So that's absolutely critical. And yes, so you know, I talked to Hassan and Sarah. You know, we need to make the top of the story interesting so people are going to want to keep going down. I mean, absolutely, that's true. But yeah, it's not to say now, you know, 18 seconds. That is the average, but you know, that includes things that are you know one paragraph long to whatever. So there are stories that. You know, if we can get a story to a minute and a half, 2 minutes, then that's a really good story. I mean, that's so, and that happens on occasion.
This has been a lot of fun. And you thought 2 hours would be too much. See, we blew by the first hour and no problem at all. We thank Ben Lanka for coming in today. He's the editor of the Marion Star, the paper of note here in Marion for more than 100 years, started by the former president, Warren G. Harding. Ben, thank you so much for coming in. And like I say, I hope we can do it often.
Well, thanks so much. Thanks for having me. Appreciate being here.
We're going to take a quick break. Come back in about 10 minutes with more interesting stuff.
Framing on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM is supported by CRT McKinney.